Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
Support the Bartholomew Town Podcast by subscribing, rating, and reviewing on Apple Podcasts.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
Welcome in to another edition of the Bartholomew Town Podcast. I'm your host, Bill Bartholomew. On today's episode, I sit down with First Works' Kathleen Pletcher. Kathleen Pletcher is the Executive Artistic Director of First Works, a Providence-based arts performance and educational nonprofit, which she founded in 2004 on the heels of her work overseeing the highly successful First Night Providence. First Works has produced dozens of events in Rhode Island across a wide spectrum of multimedia art and are partners in the ever-expanding PVD Fest, now entering its fifth year. Our conversation touched on Kathleen's journey as an artist, including her time in New York as an experimental puppeteer, the immeasurable aspects of the impact that live art brings to a community, and how the intersection of art, media, and design can be the rising tide that lifts Rhode Island's future. Enjoy new episodes of the Bartholomew Town Podcast every Tuesday and Friday. Listen on your favorite app. Visit bartholomewtown.com or ripodcast.com. It's where you'll find the dozens of conversations I've had with Rhode Island influencers like Pawtucket Mayor Don Grebian, Congressman Jim Langevin, policy whiz Rebecca Weber, communications strategist Mike Rea, Brown University's Wendy Schiller, Providence Mayor Jorge Alorza. It's all right there for you at bartholomewtown.com. And if you're listening to this on release day, I'll be on television tonight as a panelist on A Lively Experiment, 7 o'clock on Rhode Island PBS, available digitally shortly thereafter. I'll post the link on my Twitter handle, at Bill Bartholomew. All right, without further ado, let's get to my conversation with the Executive Artistic Director of First Works, Kathleen Pletcher.
Let's talk about kind of a summary of your story as an experimental puppeteer in New York. That's a pretty cool place to start.
Okay, shall we start?
And let's start right there, and then how that sort of brought you to Rhode Island and First Works.
Yeah, so I have you could call it richer checkered. You could call it checkered, but arts background because I actually started as a classical pianist and conservatory trained, but I wasn't an improviser and I wasn't a composer, and I had such a drive, need to be doing stuff that had more social impact, and so puppetry and developmental theater really became the outlet, the avenue for that. And across my professional life, I founded two experimental puppet theaters. One started; it was called the Underground Railway, and it actually still exists in Central Square in Cambridge. Underground Railway Puppet Theater. That was in Oberlin, Ohio, so a stop on the Underground Railway. And then when I moved to New York, I founded another one that was called Ragabash Studio. And really the convergence of musicians and visual artists and theater people and the inanimate object, the puppet, and how it could be animated and be so powerful. So I was doing that for quite a few years. We had a studio in Soho when there were still hardware stores and, a certain amount of grunge, which got crowded out a fair amount, and touring quite a bit, touring all over the country. Spent a year living in Rome and also doing puppetry. And when my husband and I came back, it was we were going to go back to New York, but family was starting to we were starting to have a family and we're also in Providence and homesteaders in the Armory District, and so we moved to Rhode Island full time, all in, and that has been great because I think wherever else I've been, there is just no place like Rhode Island.
It certainly is unique.
It certainly is unique. And it was so cool to think that when I first set foot in Rhode Island, the trees around the Armory District were about my height, which is not substantial. And, you know, now they're touring the Cranston Street Armory and towering. And, you know, it's so wonderful to see everything that has developed. I mean, stuff still needs to happen. But my husband Jay was at RISD and started as a sculptor and ended up as provost there for a number of years. And this was really home. We commuted a lot to New York. But coming here and really being someone who's in performance, my personal story was that I was artistic director at First Night Providence, and so really had this festival kind of festival, city, community, arts, all coming together, and it sort of brought all my disparate parts of performance into one place.
Yeah, no, I could see that. You know, I remember First Night as a, you know, growing up in South County, that was a big thing to get dropped off and be able to roam around. You know, I remember going to like the Safari Lounge and the Met for crazy shows. But the graphic design, you know, the look of the moon, the commercials, everything about that night, it did have a feel to it that was very packaged and very specific. I don't know if that's kind of part of what you mean. Everything sort of converged and it just felt naturally together.
Yeah. I think there was a lot of kind of crossing between things, you know, whether it's puppetry or music or wonderful performances in street in windows, you know, storefront windows, and just really way before the term creative placemaking, which is something that FirstWorks and I have worked with quite a bit. First Night was pushing at those boundaries and looking at what that could mean and kind of refining it. At one point, there were well over 100 First Nights across the country. And boy, did things change. The times changed. And here in Providence, we had a couple blizzards on New Year's Eve. That was intense. I had an aerial dance company performing three shows at PPAC, and they made it in, you know, just biting my nails. But their apparatus did not. So, you know, that was a very improvisatory moment.
Yep.
And then 9/11 happened. And so for First Nights all across the country, and including, you know, the mothership in Boston, shut down. And so part of FirstWorks founding story that I'm really proud of and have been told by people on the national level, you know, you got to own your founding story. But I had done a strategic plan for First Night Providence to take it year round. And all this other stuff happened and it kind of went into hiatus. And in 2003, 2004, when David Cicilline was elected mayor and was forming a Department of Art, Culture, and Tourism, they came to me and said, "What is that plan? And let's partner." And so we were the first, FirstWorks was the first partnership of art, culture, and tourism in 2004. And we took that festival concept and played it forward with a fall festival. There was an artist-driven New Year's Eve happening called Bright Night that went on for many years and was very locally focused. And we were always this cross-fertilization, you know, of guest artists and artists from across the world and spectacles. And so First Night was born from FirstWorks was born from First Night, from that. And I like to say festivals are in our DNA. So now as the founding partner and co-producer of PVD Fest, you know, it's like, right, that there's a continuity in the disruption, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, that it is that idea played into a really different time with really different social and urban needs from where First Night started. But FirstWorks, we really look at for the festival and for the season, arts that lift Rhode Island It's never just the performance. It's always the whole gestalt of conversations and collaborations and partnerships and the spirit in the streets or in the theater. All that's important.
The unintended and intended consequences, I guess, of a major performance, right? The ripple effect of it. You can't really predict how it's going to affect people, but you can certainly anticipate that there's going to be a conversation around something, or even if people don't realize that they're going to be somewhat moved, if you're confronted with art on a regular basis, whether it's street art or, you know, going to First Night or PVD Fest, whatever it is, at some point that's going to affect you, you know, unless you're totally not human, you know.
As an audience.
As an audience, right.
And I think people with live performance, there's living art, we call it. Coming together, sharing the experience, the memories, but when you have an appetite to have that kind of experience, the ideas behind it are also like, oh wow, what is this about? At FirstWorks, we have artist up close conversations, and if they happen after the show, we're amazed how many people stay. You know, hundreds of people stay, and I have totally redacted the words Q&A from my vocabulary, hopefully from our vocabulary, because a conversation is so much deeper than that, and often the people who have seen the performance have as much to offer, you know, as the artist, and it becomes a dialogue.
No question. Yeah, I've tried to eliminate the term interview, at least in the context of a podcast. It's been referred to as a conversation. It's almost comical probably for people who listen to the episodes or listen to the show a lot, the word conversation, because I say it like 1,000 times probably.
Uh-huh.
But it's true. It's back and forth. And as an artist, as a performing artist, the relationship with the audience, whether it's on a one-on-one basis or on just the broad basis, you know, it's not just the feedback of, oh yeah, I like that song, but how do people feel? What are they moved by? That position, as there's no hierarchy when it comes to understanding art. There's no specialists. You know, someone who has no training or experience whatsoever is still going to be impacted. It's their experience.
That's the thing too that really inspires us at FirstWorks is that everybody has their own experience. You know, and this is true in the theater. This is true at PVD Fest. I'm always fascinated by things like FirstWorks brought the first full performance by Alvin Ailey American Dance Theater to Providence as part of a much larger, like 4-month kind of series of workshops and culminating in a performance at PPAC. So I had seen Ailey a bunch of times. I'd seen them 6 months before in New York, and it was a good performance. But here, it was electric, here in Providence, and on the FirstWorks stage. And so I think, well, why was it electric? And I think there are a couple things. The performance itself was excellent, but people were so energized, they were getting up and dancing in the aisles, you know. Men who'd come from corporate jobs, so they're in suits, but they are getting down in the aisles. And then also for the performers, they had worked with kids in our arts learning program, and they had had conversations and shared meals, and they knew who they were performing for. And I think that makes all the difference, you know, that it is a very real moment. And that's tremendously exciting.
There's something to be said about that as well, kind of comparing it to the regularity if you're a New York performer or a touring performer. When you play New York, when you play a Boston, you know, eventually you probably become somewhat numb to that, I would say, you know, as compared with going into a town where you are the biggest thing in town irrefutably, and you have all the attention, at least most of the attention of the arts world. You know, you're playing to a higher level of energy almost at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it's attention, but I think it also is what we were saying about the conversation. I think when you were performing and you know that, you know, 200 of the kids who you've been working with in workshops are up there, you know, in the balcony, it feels different when you're so received and you feel that appetite. And it's just, I think it's so special. I would say most artists who perform, and of course you're a musician and would have a feeling about this as well, but you know, it's very rarely phone it in, you know. It's always being in the moment, but Firstworks really looks through our model of community engagement and live performance at the epicenter of that to make that moment extraordinary, to make that moment kind of electric and real and human. And so I love talking about this stuff. It's kind of, there are a lot of things to running a nonprofit and doing all the different performances and festivals and workshops. But when we talk about this, for me, it's the essence, is that live performance moment where you can't get it anywhere else.
And that's using the, for lack of a better term, like the business side of art to create, to be a curator and to create that moment. You know, your role in that capacity of bridging those kids and those performers, those high level performers and those super intrigued kids and making that connection, you're now a part of the art. It's not just we book bands or we book, dance companies to come through. You're creating something in your own right there. At least that's my impression.
Well, and we could have a conversation about the words that we don't like to use. So I don't like to use the word presenter, mm-hmm. Because it sounds so transactional. And coming from being a creative artist, you know, this is, for me, this is the canvas, you know, and having so many different partners who contribute to that idea that the arts can lift Rhode Island is pretty thrilling.
Let's go with that for a second, if we could, and then we'll get to some specific stuff. The arts lifting Rhode Island. Rhode Island right now, it's in a transitional point where we've got to start thinking about the future industries, whatever those will be. How do we build that workforce? How do we make sure that people can afford to live here in the city if they want to, in the city of Providence if they want to? Whatever, all these major questions. We kind of have to redesign the state in a lot of ways. But arts, sometimes I feel like it gets generically thrown into the mix in the sense of, number one, well, we just need to have people be able to think more creatively so they can go into STEM work, and then they'll have problem-solving skills. And then number two, for just this entertainment value that it brings. But what about that intangible, you know, just the energy that arts brings to an area? How do we quantify that, and how can we convince people how important this is to the health and of this state and the future of this state?
Yeah, how can we convince people? Well, I think, you know, you've hit on something that we look for tangible metrics, right? And as if those told the whole story, and they don't. But one thing about PVD Fest that we're really pleased to say is, you know, over 100,000 people came last year, you know, so, and then we can multiply that using certain calculators into the economic impact and the jobs created. And, all that is important data points, but I like to think back to, I think it was 2012, the precursor to PVD Fest, which was the Firstworks Festival on the Plaza, when we had the aerial dance group Bandaloop, who rappelled down One Financial Plaza, and it was just stunning. A stunning way to see the city differently. And one reporter wrote about some of the problems in the city and then said, you know, we've moved rivers, and just this weekend at the Firstworks Festival, dancers danced on the side of a building and made us see we can do anything. And, you know, what is the measure for that? But I'm not sure. But you do see that sort of sense of inspiration. You know that no athlete is going to win a race feeling like they're, you know, I don't know what, feeling sort of a sense of shame and failure and all that. That it is that sense of the possible that kind of breaks things open. And just last week, FirstWorks had Black Violin perform as part of our Artistic Icon series. And they not only performed, they worked with string players from across the state. And part of the name of their tour was the Impossible Tour. And I love that thought that art, music, performance helps us see what's possible. Not to discount that problem-solving skills, the ability to collaborate, all those are you know, kind of hard facts about participating in the arts, but do they become a driving force? I know.
Yeah, it's so intangible, and it's a matter of, you know, you just, there's no specific way to communicate it. It's just one of those things that you just have to feel it, I think. But once you do, and once you're able to understand the impact that it has, one way to do that is to look at places that have no art, you know, that have no music venue, that no even restaurants that have live music, that don't have a theater, that don't have any public art, and look at the, you know, either the boring nature of those places or the dilapidation and discouragement. And I won't name cities, but there are cities in the Northeast that you can kind of trace that back to. You know, even in Newport, if I'll name a city I lived in, beautiful, beautiful arts community now being completely destroyed by Airbnb, this obsession with turning the place into a tech hub or something like that. And that balance, when it's lost, the danger is that now most people in their 20s and 30s are leaving Newport. They're moving to Providence or New York or wherever. In mass.
Right. So we see the people moving in, that influx, you know, glad your story is part of that.
Oh, yeah.
We see that influx. And with FirstWorks Arts Learning, we see kids. So we're in our 15th year, and we see students we've worked with who are now the first in their family to go to college. And who can say along the way that with FirstWorks, they performed with jazz at Lincoln Center, because we build these hybrids, these crossover things with students performing, and like with Black Violin. So, or one of our students who said, you know, the thing I'm learning in FirstWorks Arts Learning is not how to be a dancer or a musician. I'm learning that I can be anything I want. I can be a teacher. I can be a judge. I can be a doctor. I have a voice. And the more people who are, you know, kind of awoke, you know, I think that's going to give us all a better chance at making some of the changes you're talking about.
Absolutely. It's a part of the package that it's just as important as talking about K through 12 or pre-K and retraining and everything. To me, it's got to be in the conversation. Otherwise, we're doomed. What a boring, lifeless, soulless place this would become if we extracted art and made cuts to that as far as the importance of it for the everyday person.
So. Yeah, I think instead of it, extracting, embedding is,
yeah,
you know,
exactly,
the way to go. And we're really pleased to have businesses who want to partner. I mean, FirstWorks has kind of been propelled for 15 years on partnerships, and a lot of partnerships, the things we learn from partners and the way together we can do a lot more than we could do on our own. I think of in 2009, which was a really tipping point year, now a long time ago for us, but we collaborated with Yo-Yo Ma, and we were pretty small. The whole project was like, you know, half the size of our organization's budget.
Yep.
But Yo-Yo as an artist is really generous, and we had a lot of fundraising to do. But then once that happened and that was in place, we were doing things with the Silk Road Project really across the state, and able to do performances for students, as well as a big sold out performance at Providence Performing Arts Center that launched their North American tour. So I think when it fires on a bunch of different levels, you know, that there needs to be a business level, and there needs to be a community level, and there need to be different ways that live arts have kind of have that ripple effect. Used that phrase, yeah.
No, I totally agree. All right, let's pivot to some specific stuff going on here. Obviously, we got PVD Fest, going to be talking about that kind of a lot for the next few months, probably.
Oh, until- we're almost in countdown mode. We have a little something first because we're celebrating our 15th anniversary.
Yeah, let's talk about the 15th anniversary here coming up in short time.
Yeah, it'll actually be the whole year, but we've started this month already with Black Violin, hip hop and classical music colliding. But on the 17th of April, which is either before or after, depending on when you're listening to this, we have Complexions Contemporary Ballet, and we're doing a tribute to David Bowie. This is a piece of their Stardust that is just sensational. And Complexions is America's first fully multicultural ballet company. And we've been working with them. They've been in schools. They've been here. Conversations with the two artistic directors who come out of being principals from Alvin Ailey and American Ballet Theater. But really getting to the kernel of this idea that amazes me, which is that contemporary ballet, with all its rigor and virtuosity and all that, has a way of speaking to the moment of time we're in that even goes beyond modern dance to do that. And so Dwight and Desmond, the artistic directors, are really articulate about that and what they're doing and kind of crossing what feels like a traditional art form into popular culture, into opening up ideas and conversation about race. And, you know, it's a lot that springs from the performance. But anyway, that felt like a wonderful, splendid way to mark 15 years because, you know, nothing's a given. And when we started with a $15,000 grant in 2004, you know, our future was an idea, a strategy, and a lot of very exciting artists who contributed and performances. So we go from there and celebrate 15 and yay. And that is, then we'll be fully wound up and we can just burst forward into PVD.
Yeah, June 6th will come quickly.
Yeah, it really is inhabiting all 4 days.
Yeah.
And that's really exciting. Certainly PVD Fest ideas and Thursday as a kickoff, but then Friday is going to be an incredible evening of spectacle and music. Grupo Nietzsche, which is just the salsa experience.
And, yeah, they're from Colombia, right?
Yeah. And so they go from us into New York to the Barclay Center and, you know, just like, I don't know, what's that, 20,000 seats? So, I mean, that's amazing to think. And last year we had the Breaking the World Record in Bachata. And so it feels great to just see the way we evolve and change it up. So it's different every year. We're Firstworks is in charge of the spectacles and so the ways you look up. And that is something that lots of things are cooking on the stove and then something comes to the fore. And this year it's Eventi Verticali from Italy. And so a whole kind of celebrate Italy kind of strand to the festival. But they are artists who dreamed of dancing on a flying wall. And so their piece is Quadro, and it will be up in the air, hoisted by a crane. And this wall that the dancers are aloft and suspended dancing on. So
cranes in the sky.
Cranes
a whole
in
new
the
meaning.
Sky. Yeah. A growing city.
Something I loved about when I was speaking with the mayor about the festival, that, you know, his description of it, I'm going to be out there, you know, on bike or on foot or whatever, and there's no plan. You know, we're just going to go with it. And that's how everyone should approach this. No one should be stressed out about, oh man, I got to get to this event. It's not like Newport Folk Festival where you got to really plan.
Oh, yeah,
my app
on my phone every
totally,
moment.
Absolutely. It should be just as low-key and exciting wherever you go. And I think the programming at the top speaks to that. The whole festival feels robust, and that allows you to have no plan, you know?
Well, to be spontaneous. Yeah. I feel like whenever I have a weekend that – I love my weekends with events and all that, but but that doesn't have that, I'm like, And, you know, I think that that is the thing about festivals. And the idea of a festival has been, National Endowment for the Arts has done a whole publication about what festivals do that that other kinds of formats or performances don't. That spontaneity, the fact that audience encounters with each other is really amazing, that you can get to know people, that there are, that it's your experience and you own it. And so that's the way place that live performance takes back the self-curation you can do with your playlist and says, well, you can do it right now. You can self-curate right now. It's your day. There's food, there's people, there's, you know, a surprise at every corner. And there are some things you really don't want to miss. But hopefully we give you enough chances that that there's no stress. Another group we're really excited about is Syncopated Ladies, which is an all-female tap squad that is from LA. They have a real kind of fierce female force to them. And because of they've collaborated with Beyonce, they have 50 million viral views. That's like getting there. And they will be on both Saturday and Sunday. So we have some anchor things. And certainly the curators and producers and artists who are all working to create, whether it's a performance or actually a whole stage, fill a whole stage is, you know, stuff to dive into. I think for us, dance at the festival too feels, I mean, people are dancing in the streets, but to put tap on the stage, to put percussive dance on the stage feels really sweet, especially turning 15, because we started our very first works performance was Palabolas at the Veterans Memorial Auditorium before it was renovated. And, you know, we had no idea how many people would come. And there were people lined up across the street to get into this. And at that point in 2004, we were told it was the largest audience that had come together for contemporary dance in the state.
And I'll even take back what I said earlier about Newport. There's one example of an exception, that Island Moving Company. Of course, they have done a great job on the fundraising side. Let's not be, you know, you can't discount that. Which is why they're able to be there, but that's great. They should, you know, they're doing great work, and that's probably an example of the type of, you know, arts organization Newport should be following. You know, there should be more of those for other mediums, right? But I agree, there has been a dance resurgence, and it's hard to pull.
Yeah, we're so committed to that. Dance is, it can be tough in a way. A lot of the dance, what we are doing with Complexions, I mean, it is production intensive.
Yep.
You know, it's there is a lot to fundraise for and to all that, and the number of bodies and the technical needs. But but we've been really at First Works committed to dance and the Joffrey Ballet, which we brought for the first time to Rhode Island, Alvin Ailey, American Dance Theater, Savion Glover, tap. I love percussive dance.
Yeah, percussive dance is nuts. I mean, even going back to, I'm thinking of some of the shows, that some of the dance performances I'd see, like the church at St. Mark's, you know, in the basement that kind of nutty stuff.
Yeah, and that's a vibrant.
Vibrant, and the first couple of times I went in there.
Bed.
Totally, and you're thinking, you know, where am I? You know, you have to, you, as an audience member with dance, I feel like, at least for me, you know, it takes extra patience to really feel the athleticism and feel the art in a way that, you know, especially being confined in a, you know, basement room like at St. Mark's. But when you're at PVD Fest or an environment like that, you're going to, you have a little bit more, the performer has a little bit more rope to play with, I feel like, to get people intrigued. And then once the audience member knows what's going on, they really get it. I mean, you're hooked on dance. You know,
it's very visceral.
It's very visceral, yeah.
Very visceral, and especially tap. Yeah. You know, that's something we're going to be doing more of. But I think it has grabbed me, and that's another one of those words that in the very beginning, we didn't call it dance. You know, and because, or especially modern dance. And I'm glad to see that that the associations have become over the past 15 years, you know, much more uplifting. And, you know, I mean, I think we can probably thank some television input to that.
No question, you know? Yeah. And that's interesting, the trickle down from mainstream stuff as well. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, music benefits from that too, when all of a sudden there's a grunge band that becomes a huge international band. A lot of kids start writing songs differently after that. There's nothing wrong with that process. I guess last question. Number one, what's the best resource for people to find out what FirstWorks is up to as far as online? What would that be?
Well, certainly our website,
yep.
Which is a little tricky because it's first-works.org.
Fun.
So it's not all one word. There's a hyphen in between the two words spelled out. And, yeah. You know, we have some in-depth features on PVD Fest. There is also pvdfest.com. So that's the festival in its all its glory. But for FirstWorks, we'll be announcing a number of projects from our season, some of which kind of stem from PVD Fest and play forward that people can get involved in. And certainly, if there are students or schools who want to get involved in our arts learning, you know, there's kind of three things we do, and we run performances through the season, and also this year started doing more with films, and then we do arts learning workshops for students and starting to explore also for older adults some special
nice
programs, and then the festival. Yep. And you know, coming out of our long history of producing festivals, and about 9 years when we did a digital media festival called Pixelerations, which was again this blend of local and international, tons of people who've made Providence their home, who work in digital media and in electronic media and music, and that's really exciting to tap into.
Last question, what's your message to someone out there? I met a kid yesterday, super excited about it. You could just tell she was going to, like, a lifelong artist, or at least going to be on this side of the coin. And she was talking about, I'm going to go to, I met her, she was an intern at a news organization that I freelance at. But anyway, we had this conversation, and all that she thought of as far as going to school and everything was external, you know, whether it's go to the news school in New York or go to school in Boston, whatever it was. And I think that's great. You know, if you're looking to pursue art or music or journalism, whatever it is, it's great to get out. But what's your message, kind of one sentence, to that person to give Rhode Island a chance after they graduate to come back here and plant their creative seeds here right out of the gate? Because that's who we need right now, that girl.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think something that I come back to is, remember why you wanted to do this in the first place. And then you're challenging me to be place specific. I think you need to think, and what is a fertile ground to let you make that happen?
Mm-hmm.
So for me, I've lived around the world in New York and most recently Minneapolis, people covet what we have here. The ability to collaborate, the scale that the city's on and is, and also the possibility to really dream big and then kind of share that dream to have things happen. The first time we had the dancers dancing off the side of the building came after 5 years of climbing around rooftops with, you know, business people and arts people and saying, how can we make this happen? You know, and joining forces really with our partners at Art, Culture, and Tourism and the city and business partners is how that happened. You know, being somewhere where things are possible, being in a city that defines itself as the creative capital already is like an embrace,
right?
As a creative. The more that we are growing here into design and music and performance and digital coming together, you know, the crossover just is like that rising tide.
Ah, yes, that rising tide. That's what we're searching for here a lot on this podcast. And We're getting there. That's all the time we have for today, though. I'll be back on Tuesday with a brand new episode. Watch me tonight on television on Lively at 7 on Rhode Island PBS. Until next time, I'm Bill Bartholomew. We'll talk soon.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.